Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. A-Rod, Austin Rodriguez behind the glass. Brian's a lazy bones, not working today. It is a Taco Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. How about this weather? We cannot catch a break from the weather in this area. I was about to shower after I finished prep today. I thought there was a tornado coming through my neighborhood. My neighbor's fences are down. There was street flooding. 75-mile-per-hour winds reported at Bush Airport. This is
planes
insane.
Are grounded right now.
Makes sense.
Yeah, the lightning.
I don't want them flying.
The lightning
in
Sugar Land was ridiculous.
Was it really? I haven't, like, I've been away from the news because I was, like, dealing with my own stuff. It's incredible. We can't get a break from the weather in this city.
Well, and the other thing that I don't understand, as much as these meteorologists are supposed to keep you ahead of the game, oh, it's going to rain today, 60% chance. How about this one might be a doozy? I mean, we didn't get that last week, and it was a doozy, and now we got another one right on top of it. And all I heard this morning was, well, there's about a 60% chance we might get some isolated storms today. No, this was an MF-er. This was a big one, and it came on in a short period of time.
I think one day I'm going to be mayor of the city of Houston. One day. I don't know what day that's going to come. Would you vote for me if I was running for mayor?
It depends on who you're running against.
You like who they have currently in office?
I mean, not even Whitmire. I'm talking about, like, it really depends on who you're running against.
The
if they
first
have
thing,
a heartbeat, I'm probably going to support them.
The ticket, that's mean, the ticket that I'm going to run on is whenever there is bad weather, all the toll roads are free.
That'd be awesome.
All free. Like, why are we charging toll whenever we're having derecho storms and tornadoes and hurricanes? Why in the world are we charging tolls during that time?
Plus, you need, like, an emergency lane, and even, like, with the HOV is one thing, but when everybody just feels like, if I throw my hazards on, I could do whatever I want, and it doesn't matter. I could swerve over 3 lanes of traffic. I could just hit the brakes in the middle of, like, a main drag of highway. The driving gets worse to where you need escape lanes even more, and if you can use the toll road's probably cleaner in a lot of ways in terms of, like, less traffic, but my God, they should. That's a good idea.
Yeah, so you would vote for me.
And the HOV
it sounds like
lane.
I won your vote.
I think they should open up the HOV lanes to just about to anybody when you get weather like this.
If there's severe weather, toll roads are free, HOV lane open for everybody. Who says no? Vote for Branham in whatever year it is. They just had the election, right? Whitmire just beat, what was it? Who'd she
Sheila
beat?
Jackson
Sheila Jackson Lee. So what, 4 year terms in mayor? I have no idea. I don't pay attention to politics.
I believe they're 4 years. 4 year
term. I'm not a career politician, as you know. I barely have a career at this. I'm going to run for mayor in 4 years, and I'm running on the ticket. Severe weather, you get free tollways.
You could be like that dude that's in the Senate. That I think it's the Senate. That just wears the hoodies every day. He's like, screw the suits. It's not my deal. It's not who I am.
Oh, you're talking about the guy from Philly. The trash
is
guy
he from
looking?
Pennsylvania? He's bald. He looks like a wrestler. He's bald with a goatee.
I think he's from Pennsylvania.
And he wears a hoodie most times.
There's some theories on him, too.
But he gets some stuff done. I mean, when he wants to save, like,
I don't know. I don't pay
people
attention.
That have been held hostage or whatever, he just gets on a plane and goes and gets them. And
he does?
Yeah, he just like did it recently.
That's a real thing?
And he actually wore, like, a suit for the... He had to meet with, like, the leader of some... it was in Turks and Caicos. There were Americans that were caught with ammunition in their... luggage from previous trips.
I didn't realize that guy was freeing people who were
there's
kidnapped.
Like five of them. He got on a plane to Turks and Caicos, met with the president of Turks and Caicos, and got some guy was an ex-baseball player. And
Fetterman. Virginia says Fetterman.
There you go. That's him. Yep.
Fetterman. Yeah, there's some thoughts that there's like some deep fake with Fetterman and that he really like isn't alive anymore. Or he's, like, in a coma. Like, there's some crazy conspiracies out there. Yeah. There's some crazy conspiracies out there.
I mean, he actually, if he just did this and they interviewed him, I think he's okay.
I have, well, they're saying it's the fake person. that's doing the interviews for Fetterman, and that the real Fetterman's like in a coma or something. I don't know. I don't pay attention to this sort of thing. I don't pay attention to politics. I don't care about politics.
That's amazing to me is like you can just write your own ticket to do whatever you want for as long as you want if you get in and win at least one election. Like Sheila Jackson Lee, she's been everywhere from Michael Jackson's funeral to like anything that pops up locally or
she
nationally.
She might have been to Fetterman's funeral.
If possible. I mean, because, you know, they're all kind of a tight-knit bunch. She shows up everywhere. It's like, where's Waldo? Sheila Jackson Lee's going to be there.
Yeah.
She's everywhere. Then she ran for mayor out of the blue. I was like, oh, my God. I thought she had a sweet enough gig as it was.
Tony the Handsome says, I'd vote for Jeremy if he legalized crack. Why not?
That's good.
Why not? What's wrong? What's the downside of crack? You have to tell me. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Y'all be safe on the roadways. And if I was mayor, you'd be driving on the toll roads for free. I just remember that in 4 years
only
when Branham runs for mayor. Only in severe weather, yeah. Severe weather is your free ticket to drive in the tollway, the tolls, and then the HOV, all that stuff.
And not Dr. Dre on 290 using the left lane, the left lane, whenever, however he wants.
One of the things I will crack down on is mayors, 18-wheelers in the left lane that are impeding traffic. That will be a no-no. That will be, like, we're decriminalizing a lot of things nowadays. That's going to be, what's the opposite of decriminalizing? I guess just criminalizing. We're going to criminalize 18-wheelers and big rigs in the left lane again. Make the left lane great again. All right, Astros, good, bad, and ugly. This is a weird one because everybody was lazy bones and didn't work yesterday, and usually we determine, like, the good, the bad, and which we start with based on if the Astros won the series or not. So, technically, they beat Oakland, but then they lost yesterday, so they're 2-2. Most recent one's a loss. Do we start with the good? Do we start with the bad? I don't know.
You can call it. I mean, look, there was a lot of good from the Oakland series, and there wasn't, I wouldn't say it was hellaciously bad last night. We know that one of the bads was very obvious, and other than that, you can kind of pick apart. We know Seattle's got good pitching, too.
They have very good pitching. Seattle's got very good pitching. I guess we can go with the bad because I think more people are sour based on that loss yesterday. So we can start with the bad and the ugly, and we'll get to some of the good because there was some good in the Oakland series. 713-780-ESPN, you're bad, then you're good. 713-780-3776. 6941 says, ask Bagwell what the downside of crack is. He's the one who looks like he's on it. That's mean. We're not going to read that kind of stuff on the air. We're not going to read that slander about Jeff Bagwell on the air. We never talk bad about a fellow killer bee. 713-780-ESPN. You're chuckling.
I just thought of something as you were saying that.
What would you think of?
I was coaching this weekend, and the two umpires walked up to me at a certain point during the game and were like, hey, you do radio, don't you? And I go, yeah. And they're like, you're Joel, right? Yeah. And I go, yeah. And he goes, who's that guy you work with that you fight with all the time that just, you sound like you guys want to kill each other? I'm like, Jeremy?
Brian?
He's like,
is Brian that you do that? You want to kill Brian?
He's like, yeah, that's the guy. I go, we don't want to kill each other. It's just sometimes it gets a little passionate.
So what were all the great things he said about me, this guy?
It was between innings. It wasn't a lot. But then it was like, what do you think about the Texans? What do you think about this? What do you think about that? I'm like, trying to win a game here.
409 Josh Branham, state mandated 3-second yellow lights will get you some votes too. All right. I'm a voice for the voiceless. I'm all for ideas. I want to be the mayor in 4 years.
So you can run the yellow?
I think it's just a 3-second yellow, like a three count, three in the lane.
Oh,
one,
got it. Okay.
Two, three.
So it's not a quick one. I get it.
Eric, can we talk about how stupid people who use their flashes are when it rains? Imagine if everyone did this and no blinkers. I agree with that.
What I just said. They put them on and then they just do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, and plus you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to put on your hazards. I don't really know the reason. I just know you're not supposed to.
Because, is it only if you have an emergency going on?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's something to do with it, but you're not supposed to use your hazards in storms.
Oh, because my neighbor told me that you're supposed to use them because it tells people that you really are having a hard time seeing or something.
I've everything that I've read, and again, I don't know the reason.
Yeah, so I'm not aware of the rule.
This could be hogwash and malarkey. I don't know.
Law.
But I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to do that. Anyways, Astros. 713-780-ESPN. The boss is saying Astros, Astros. Austin Rodriguez is in our ear saying Astros, Astros, Astros. The first inning. The first inning yesterday.
Bingo.
Like,
that
the Astros had a no-hitter after the second inning. Framber Valdez, he was getting squared up. At the same time, he was getting ground balls, except for that one fantastic play that Jake Meyers made. The thing that drove me crazy about that first inning were the two-out singles. Like, you get the great play. Bases loaded, one out. You get the great play from Jake Meyers, 5-star catch, later deemed a 4-star catch. Don't know what the difference was. But then get out of the inning. Like, use that – to get yourself out of the inning. Only one run scores, and if you only give it the one run there, you probably win. So the two-out singles in that first inning drove me crazy because, like, when you get the big play, you're supposed to stack another big moment out of it. You got the big play with Jake Myers. You give up the run. Oh, well. Go get the next guy. Get yourself out of the inning. But base hit, run scores, base hit, run scores. It was 3-0 before you could blink.
Yeah, it was, and it was on my list, and it was kind of a three-parter because it was the first inning debacles. It was the 0-2 or ahead in the count, two strikes up pitching debacles throughout, and especially it was relevant last night, that they just couldn't get out of their own way. And it was just bizarre to me that they struggled so much in the first inning. And then after that, and the crazier thing was they scored most of their runs in the fourth inning of every game over the weekend. And it was like they would have explosions offensively if they were going to win a game in the fourth. But they were constantly giving up runs to start games to set themselves back a little bit because the Peña error, even in the Verlander game, gave up his only run.
Yeah. Yeah, that drove me crazy. What other badges did you have?
From a Fromber perspective, he obviously still isn't over the mental issues because as much as once he got out of the first inning, but the first inning, you could just see that he was still just in his own head. But it was his last inning. He had two outs and two strikes, and he did get jobbed on a call that looked like it could have been a strike, but it wasn't. And before you knew it, he was like completely just getting on the rubber again, throwing, shaking his head, still ticked off. I think he put two runners on after that. And it's like, what are we doing? We're still here, and Caratini's catching.
Yeah, he was. He went out there and visited the mound in that first inning, too. Like, Fromber, that point that you're talking about, I remember. It was the strike just above the knees, and Fromber was like, oh, you got to be kidding me, bend at the back. And then he did that awkward, uncomfortable smile. And that uncomfortable smile with Fromber Valdez is always the smile like, uh-oh, it's about to unravel. And he lost command. He was lucky to get out of that inning without giving up a run, which was good, but you could see it coming. Now, Caratini catching him, that was interesting. Mm-hmm. Fromber, too, in that inning you're talking about, he shook off Caratini like three straight pitches right after that happened, too, by the way. But you see Caratini went to the mound in the first inning with Fromber? Mm-hmm. Like, okay.
We called it. We talked about it. I said I would expect Caratini to be the Fromber catcher the rest of the way or for the foreseeable future because whether Yiner can call pitches or not, it just seems like Fromber felt like he could walk over a young catcher, and I don't think he can pull that with Caratini.
No, I think he tried, and Caratini like, Fromber's like the toddler that's trying to test his parents. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to try to get away with a few things. He's going to try to test. You tell him to stop. He takes that one extra step. Hey, don't go into the street. He goes into the street. Like, he is the little toddler that is trying to, you give him an inch, he's trying to take a mile. He's a wild horse. He's a toddler. Like, all of these things with Fromber Valdez.
But even what you're talking about with the little uncomfortable head shake and the face that he makes,
yeah, it's always
it's like
smile.
You can smell it. You know it. The baby pooped themselves, and you go, did you poop? And no. That's that little nope.
Yeah.
Nope. And it's like, that's Fromber. That's Fromber.
He's such
poop
a child.
Poop your diaper, baby. That's Fromber.
He's so weird, this Fromber. He's so stinking good. I thought that Joe Espada's decision to use Hader on Sunday in a four-run game was not great. Like, yeah. It didn't really cost him because he didn't have the opportunity to use him yesterday. But if you flip it, say it was a 2-1 game going into the ninth, I'm not sure that Hader would have been available because he was used two of the previous three games. And the time that you used him on Sunday was when you had a four-run lead in the ninth inning. I didn't like that. Dusty used to do that all the time because he would say that you're one swing away, which basically saying the grand slam type of thing. I would have tried to avoid using Hader on Sunday. Now, again, it didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things because the Astros wouldn't have used him yesterday because they lost 3-2. But it's kind of like the foresight, looking ahead, knowing what's on tap,
that's
knowing you have Seattle. I didn't like the decision to use Hader in the ninth inning on Sunday at all.
Yeah, I didn't like it because I wanted to save all of my back of the bullpen arms as much as possible going into the Seattle series because you know it's going to be probably a very tight series. You know that one run here or there could be the difference, and you want those guys to be as fresh as possible. And on that point, kind of into the next, one of the other ones I had was, Abreu consistently and constantly annoys the hell out of me by creating his own trouble, and he gave up even a couple of hits and runs this weekend to where I know that as long as he doesn't give up a run, it's okay, but at the same time, a guy that's going to be in high leverage situations like primarily the seventh or eighth inning, I need a guy that's going to not create traffic. He's going to shut it down, and I don't know if he just doesn't want to throw primarily fastballs and he gets enamored with his slider and his off-speed pitch, or what it is, but there are times that he has a hard time dialing it back in once he starts missing the zone too, and man, that's frustrating sometimes.
Yeah, that's he has trouble with command. I mean, that is a knock on Brian Abreu. His walk rate's higher, his strike percentage isn't as high. But of the big three, he has the lowest ERA of the big three. So, you know, he certainly has the stuff. Another Abreu, Jose Abreu is back. Like, that's going to be a bad and ugly for some. I thought he looked pretty, I don't want to say pretty good. I thought he looked better at the plate yesterday. Like, I know he had just the one hit, but it's short of the ball.
Yeah.
That was pretty, I mean, the pitch was a fastball, too.
I was going to say, for what it's worth, for a fastball pitcher that throws 60-plus percent of his pitches fastballs, he looked like he had a quick enough bat, which he didn't have the last time, and he drove it to the alley in right center to where I was really pleased with that. But then he followed it up with a duck snort off the end of the bat that looked like it was a Phil Niekro knuckleball going, what the hell was that, when they actually could have needed a barreled up hit somewhere.
Do you think he should have scored on the Altuve double?
I was going to ask you the same question, because with two outs, I understand this is the debate. Tucker's coming up next. He's your best hitter right now, so you leave it in his hands. But with two outs on a base hit like that, I think he should have scored.
Yeah, he's just so slow. Like, I can't tell if he was, like, coasting. I'd like to think that he wasn't coasting.
I don't think he got a great jump.
Probably not.
When I looked at it, and I looked at it again this morning.
You can't see him leave first, though.
You cannot see him leave, but at the same time, once you see where the ball is and everything like that, and with the scenario itself, the situation, I think that he should be chugging around third to at least draw a throw.
Yeah.
And it was like they had the brakes on him before he even hit the bag.
Like, when he was cruising into third, it kind of looked like he might have been coasting. Like, I don't want to say that. I was criticized yesterday on Twitter by Familia, the family. I thought that Abreu should have made a better play on that ball in the first inning. Like, yes, I understand it's a tough play. I understand it's 100-plus miles per hour off the bat. I feel like Abreu kind of was lazy on it, Olayed it. Like, he dropped to a knee and then contorts his body to kind of like he's on in the Matrix or whatever, and he's dodging bullets. He's like contorting his body. One, I don't know why you're dropping to a knee on that play. Secondly, how about just a little half slide step and just knock it down? And maybe it bounces off his body and you don't have a chance to get the runner at first, but it's not an extra base hit. I thought it was a lazy effort, actually.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. I thought that the shin, as much as I love those guys, I thought that they were in deep cover mode to try and, you know, they were already kind of trying to put patchwork on the bad play to say bad hop, tough, you know, huge exit velocity, tough play to make. And when you look at it, I think John Singleton would have made that play. I think he would have kept it in front of him. I don't think that it would have been down the line extra base type hit. I think that he would have gotten a glove on it. I think that maybe it's because he's a bigger body too, but I think that he would have at least knocked it down. And I'm like you. I looked at that thing and I was going, yeah, guys, I don't know if he played that ball the right way. I don't think so.
I don't know if Singleton makes that play. Like, Singleton's one of the worst defensive first basemen in baseball. I just didn't love the effort from Abreu. Like, instead of just dropping to your knee and not moving and then kind of like halfway getting out of the way, little half shuffle, just wear it off the chest. And if it bounces too far away from you, because Crawford runs well, if it bounces too far away from you where it's an infield single, cool. Like, it's an infield single. But you're making $19.5 million. Before you were sent to West Palm Beach, you're on pace to have the worst season in baseball history for a position player. You're doing nothing with your bat. You're hitting under 100. Like, let's see a little bit of hustle and effort and a little bit of good attitude whenever you're back with the club on day one.
I think that's the biggest thing. You know, going into this, and even in Sugarland when they didn't make him available to the media, you know you're going to be hyper scrutinized and over scrutinized for everything that you do. So if you get any balls hit to you because of the fact that one of the knocks on top of everything else was his defense sucks, you got to do everything to try and smother that baseball. Even if you don't get the out at first, you know, for your own benefit, you got to do everything you can to smother that baseball and not let it get down the line.
Yeah. And then, look, just try. Like, I'm not saying that you should have made the play, but give me a little bit better effort than dropping to a knee and then matrixing yourself out of the play. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. We'll get to your bads and uglies. We got some good, though. Some good from the Astros weekend. 713-780-ESPN. It's a busy show. It's a Tuesday, so we'll cash them or trash them. We'll also do our Monday segment, Mailbag Monday, on a Tuesday later on in the show as well. well. A lot of thoughts about, like, Yiner Diaz, what's going on with him, what's going on in these conference finals. Really, they've been good games, but none of this, the awful series. I mean, there's a really good chance that both series are going to end in sweeps. 713-780-3776. Good, bad, ugly from the Killer Bees. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy J. Branham live right now on TikTok as well. All right, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
You're listening to ESPN975. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank. I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. All right, what's the good? What's the good from these last four games? 2 of 3 in Oakland, and then yesterday losing game one of the four-game series on Memorial Day, in which no one wants to work.
The first thing to me is Blanco. I said I was going to be watching Blanco. I know he would be grossly scrutinized if he did not look good, or that if people could start pointing fingers if he got, you know, blown out, or he blew up, or didn't have the same control and effectiveness of people saying, well, maybe the no-hitter wasn't legit, maybe his whole start of the season wasn't legit. Instead, every time that glove was checked and that hand was checked, everybody showed you that he was legit and his pitching was legit. He pitched a beautiful game, and I feel really good because of all the other things we got to talk about that he's going to be who he was before he got dinged for the glove.
Yeah, he was amazing. Like, in that game, we talked about it on Friday, like, what do the Astros need to do this weekend, blah, 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 blah. And one of the big things was Ronel Blanco. And that game had stakes for Ronel Blanco, because if he pitches poorly, what is the narrative? Oh, he's a cheater. He's doctoring the ball, the sticky stuff. He's, he's benefiting off of that. Now, if you really took a deep dive, the spin rate was almost the exact same. You didn't see any sort of competitive advantage that he was getting in that game where he got ejected than in all his previous games. So he needed to pitch well more for the perception of Ronel Blanco than anything else, and maybe for our peace of mind that we could have, okay, let's go ahead and put that to bed, put that to the side, put it in the back of our mind, that Ronel Blanco is just a really stinking good pitcher and that was an anomaly. Because he went out, not only did he pitch well, like one run, seven innings, you're going to take that every single time. His stuff was super nasty. Everything was moving. His pitches were darting here, darting there. But he also threw 104 pitches. And they were talking before the game, 85, 90. He's had the layoff, the 10-day suspension, the 10-game suspension. He's not going to throw as many pitches as he might. Oh, he throws 104 pitches and eats up seven innings for you. That was awesome to see.
Yeah, no awesome doubt about it. See. No doubt about it. And again, I had my reservations because you just don't know until you see him get back out there. And part of it, too, could have been mental, could have been the fact that, you know, on a lesser degree than what Abreu goes through, but you know you're going to be hyper-scrutinized. You know everybody's looking for you. You know everybody that's not a fan and a lot of the media members nationally are going to be watching every step he took and every pitch he threw, and he passed every test.
Yeah, he was cool to see. Really good to see him go that, like how he pitched. I thought Verlander was very good. Mm-hmm. It was vintage Verlander, too. Like, gives up a good amount of hits, but strikes out 9 over 6 innings. Was some of that because they're playing the Oakland A's? Yeah, some of it's probably because they're playing the Oakland single A's.
Well, not only that, but, you know, they gave up a run in the first inning because of the Pena error. And, you know, you could tell Jeremy felt bad about it, but you're like, okay, this is one where it's JV. He'll settle in. He's not going to be like Fromber, and he sure did. I mean, once he got out of the first inning, I mean, he seemed like he had total command and control, and he knew that whether it was a lesser opponent or not, he knew how to attack them, and then they did him a solid and broke out with some runs to kind of put that game in their back pocket, which was good.
Jake Meyer's pretty legit.
Really good.
We mentioned a little bit the catch that he made, but he's continuing to hit. And I heard, you know, Blummer and our friend Todd Kalish on the Shin yesterday. They're talking about how you're getting to a certain point of games played and at-bats where, like, okay, you're going to have to take this seriously. Meyers has played in 46 games. He's 135 plate appearances. So, like, the whole it's a small sample. Now, a heater over 135 plate appearances is going to skew the numbers more than a heater over 550 plate appearances. But you have to take Jake Meyers as a legitimate, really good player. Is he a 300 hitter? He currently is. I don't know if he can do that over a full season. He's flirting with a 900 OPS. He currently is. Don't know if he can do that over a full season. But at the very minimum, Jake Meyers, like, what was the question in center field? Can Jake Meyers be an everyday player? You had people saying that Mauricio Dubon should be the starting center fielder before the season started. Jake Meyers has graduated to he is the Houston Astros center fielder, no questions asked.
No doubt about it. I mean, we talked about what's a legit center fielder as opposed to what are people's expectations of an Astros center fielder? And they're different. And, you know, going back to the Springer days, everybody also gets this misconception of that every center fielder is going to be that kind of guy with that kind of capabilities. Look, we've talked about it multiple times. He's an above average defender. A lot of people don't believe that. But now that he's kind of got the cobwebs out and he's not, you know, running scared both in and out, and he seems to be healthy, you know, the arm is never going to be a laser by any means, but when you see the play that he made this weekend, when you see his ability when he breaks on baseballs to be able to be speedy enough to get to the gaps to cover that, that's all fine and dandy. That's check that box already. He's an above average defensive player. But when he's hitting the way he is, even if his OPS settles into somewhere around 750 to 800 and his average settles down to maybe 265 to 280, the fact is that this is night and day from what we saw after he was hurt. And this is the kind of guy that you could easily plug and play and pencil in every single day now, knowing he's going to look, give you a guy that doesn't look like a deer in the headlights anymore, and he's giving you a guy that's showing consistency.
Any other goods, any other uglies that we didn't get to?
I think that the goods, Pena got some really bad calls last night, but for the most part,
Vanover had a bad zone.
He hit awful.
Such
awful,
a bad
absolutely
zone.
Awful. And I'm good on Blummer for at least calling him out on it. Like, did they move the plate to the left or the right? Because they were really, really bad, and we talked about the one with Fromber, and then we talked about the zone that Pena got rung up twice. Abreu got screwed on a couple of them. There were a couple other guys where you're like, come on, man. Like, just give them a fighting chance to have it close to the plate to where, other than that, I think Jeremy Pena, like Jake, is a guy that, for as much as everybody set the bar way too high after the World Series and American League Championship MVPs, this dude has proven to you he is an above-average shortstop in this league, both offensively and defensively. And again, maybe he doesn't hit 300 and have the second-best average in the American League and do all these things where he's been hovering. The fact is, if he's playing like this, both offensively and defensively, you got one of the better shortstops in baseball.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't have a good night last night. No. The Golden Sombrero. There was Dan Matthews, who produces over at iHeart. He tweeted, I guess, Espada does his weekly visit with MT, and he told MT that he's going to move Bregman down to the fifth spot today, which is weird to me. Like, who's batting fourth? Is it Pena? Like, and if you're doing that, why are you doing it today but not yesterday? Because I know Bregman was 0 for as well, but Pena was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts, and you're going to move him up to the fourth spot? Like, I'm very curious who's going to hit cleanup today. I would imagine that it's going to be Pena, unless he's moving Pena to 2 and he's going to drop Tucker to 4, which to me is not a demotion. But it's just interesting that you would make that move today and not, like, yesterday. Or in the Oakland series,
yeah,
like especially in the start of this series.
Yeah.
Like, we could nitpick and say, well, you should have done before Oakland. Well, you know, we were kind of rolling. Okay, whatever. But it's weird to make that move in game two of a series as opposed to game one, especially when the guy that you were going to put in front of Bregman was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. It's weird to me. I feel like Espada, like, fills out his lineups based on public scrutiny. I'm not sure if it's from the fans or if it's from, like, upper management, like Dana Brown, Jeff Bagwell. But the way he handles his lineup is bizarre to me. It's weird to me.
It's quirky. And are we under the assumption that Abreu's not playing now tonight?
I would not have him in my lineup. Luis Castillo, very good against right-handed hitters. He's pretty dominant against righties. Lefties have some success against him.
Astros been decent against him anyway, but I'm just saying, because we talked about how frequently are you going to throw him out there. Well, you threw him out there in a tough series against tough pitching, but probably the lesser of the four pitchers you're going to see start a game for the Mariners. And he had success. He got a hit. He got a run batted in, so people aren't ready to kill him. I would assume he's not going to be in the lineup tonight. But the one that would really shake it up is if you did this and put Abreu up in that spot, which I can't, hopefully and thankfully, I can't see them doing. But I'm like, when I heard that, I'm like, oh, my God, you wouldn't think that they would think about that.
Dre said that on Twitch, Abreu back to the cleanup spot.
Oh, God.
If that were to happen,
oh,
we would riot, right?
No,
like, everybody's going to riot Minute Maid Park if they moved Jose Abreu to the cleanup spot.
It won't be Jake. It's got to be Pena.
I think it's one of two things. I think it's Pena back to the four spot. It's just really weird to do that after he was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. Do it at the start of the series, like you said. Or it could be Pena up to the two spot, and then you move Tucker back to the cleanup spot with the idea of let's get him, you know, ability to drive in some runs, which I wouldn't mind that. I'd be cool with that.
But he, again,
what if it's Jake Myers up to the two spot?
That's what I said. That's why I threw him out there, that maybe they move Jake up into that top four, top five.
I don't think that they will.
But the thing to me is that no matter where you put Tuck, Tuck's had opportunities. I mean, the one that he didn't come through on, the one we were talking about, should have Abreu scored or not, the fact that he still came to the plate with two on, two out in that situation, he still had opportunities to hit with guys on base and knock guys in. So, again, you tinker, and I understand the Bregman conundrum that you constantly are going to be going through, but Tuck's really comfortable again right there in the two hole. I don't know that I'm moving him right now.
I would. I'm okay, but he's hit everywhere though. Like, true. If you look at what he's done this season, he's hit everywhere. The one game he hit leadoff, he hit a home run. Like, he's hit everywhere. So I think he's kind of like lineup proof, batting order proof, batting order position proof. The one that I'm not messing with is Myers, actually. Like, I don't want to put Myers, like, hey, Myers, everything's going good. You're hitting well. Let's put you in the two hole. And then it's like, oh, deer in the headlight, Jake Myers.
Too much pressure.
Off him. Yeah.
Yeah. Because,
I mean, he's comfortable right now. He's rolling.
Okay, if you moved him from 9 to 8 to 7 and even 6. But you're right. It's a different animal when you move him into the top four, because the top four, top five, you're going to be hyper scrutinized now. And so, and maybe to your point, maybe he doesn't need it either. Maybe, you know, this has been enough for him, and he's rolling, and he's got confidence, and he feels good about himself, and you can tell he's got a different body language. He might start pressing if you move him up. Yeah, I'm all for leaving him right in the bottom half.
Yeah, don't mess with something that ain't broke. But it's just weird. If Painter's the cleanup spot, what did he do? He was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts. Make the move yesterday. That's why I don't think it's a spot-a. That's why I think it's either he's buckling to public pressure, which I kind of doubt because of the way they use Jose Abreu, or he's buckling to upper management telling him what to do.
Yeah, the Crane Gang is active at all times, even when we don't see them and hear them. They're there, and they're being heard, I'm sure. One of the other positives I had, kind of unsung guy, but Singleton being in the lineup again last night, but Singleton had multiple hit games throughout this four-game stretch. Singleton is still hitting the baseball. I know he's only hitting 230-something, but he still gives you the opportunity, a threat of power. And the fact is he's still putting the bat on the baseball. He's not missing wildly. He got a big he had the extra base hit last night.
He strikes out a lot.
He still strikes out a lot, but at the same time, he's putting the bat on the baseball. He gives you the power threat. Extra base hit last night. Multiple hit games in, I think, two of the four games. I'm not mad with how John Singleton's hitting the baseball.
He would be my primary first baseman against right-handed pitching. And Dubon and Abreu can battle it out for primary first baseman against left-handed pitching. So I'm with you, but I'm also not unrealistic on who John Singleton is. Like, John Singleton's a below-average first baseman in Major League Baseball. Is he your best first base option against righties? Also true, yes. And to your point, low average, but he gets on base. Like, 338 on base will play. And that ball yesterday, if the weather was warm and the wind wasn't blowing in, might have got out.
He thought he hit it.
Might have gotten out.
You know how Blummer even mentions, he gets that back flip where it's like the minute contact's made, it's like it's a hot potato, and he snaps it down. He snapped that thing down, and I think Julio Rodriguez even looked back in like, you thought that ball was gone, didn't you?
Yeah. The way he talks about his bat flip, and he says that that's kind of like an extension of a swing. It's kind of like a shooter that like holds his follow through after he feels like it's going in. Like, when he feels like he gets one, he kind of like flips it, and it's kind of, he says it's an extension of his follow through.
I can understand the extension, but then he kind of snaps it towards the dugout when he knows he got one.
Yeah.
And he did that last night. I think he pretty well thought he got one.
Yeah, I think he did. And if the wind wasn't blowing in and it was a little warmer, I think he would have. They're saying it's going to be rainy and chilly
rest of the week.
Yeah, it's not great for the Strohs, I don't think. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We had a bunch of texts talking about the pitching injuries as a bad. We know that Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy are getting MRIs today on right forearm tendonitis, it's not tendonitis, it's tenderness, it's discomfort is their word. There it is. What are the pitching options if Christian Javier and Jose Urquidy are toast? It looks like they might be. At least one of them is. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, look, we're experiencing weather issues in Houston yet again, and I keep telling you about the experts with anything to do with dealing with the elements in Houston, Texas, and that is the good people at Allstate Siding and Windows. If you've got a house that's protected with siding, it's going to be durable. It's going to be able to take on the elements, the wind, the blow, everything up against the sides. The durability factor is involved in it, but siding is an answer when you're looking for the best way to keep your biggest investment, your house, in great shape. And the windows the same way. I just redid all the windows in my house. We moved. We moved into a new house. The windows were outdated. I got with Allstate Siding and Windows. First, I talked to Mary. Then her brother came out and gave me that free estimate that's so helpful. And we looked at the fact that when we changed the windows, it was going to do a variety of things that it's done. First and foremost, it's going to make your house look awesome. It's going to look more modern. It's going to have great curb appeal. It's going to up the value if you ever resell it. Also, on top of that, it's going to keep the cool air in when you get to the dog days of summer here in Houston. In the wintertime, it'll keep the heat in, and it'll be an unbelievable protector, again, with the elements and hurricane season and like we're experiencing again today. Best thing about it is Allstate Windows and Siding, they're experts, they're Houstonians, they love taking care of H-Town, and they do it all the time. Right now, 30% off all window jobs, $2,500 off a complete siding job. And they still take care of you in a variety of other ways with discounts for first responders, military, and senior citizens, and so much more. The great thing is they'll come out to you, as I mentioned, and do a free home estimate. All you got to do is call them, 832-204-1936. 832-204-1936. They come to you. They explain what they can do. You tell them if you're looking at windows, siding, or both. They'll tell you exactly what they can do, the deals they can offer, and how it's going to help you. How about saving up to 40% on your energy bills? That's a game changer. It was great for me. It should be the greatest thing that you guys deal with in terms of saving money and upgrading your house. You can also go online at any time and check them out at AllstateWindowsAndSiding.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
People are arguing. We'll get to the Javier Urquidy MRIs coming up today. The people are arguing, though. Are you supposed to use your hazards when you're driving in a storm? Are you supposed to? I asked the Google machine. The Google machine says no.
Isn't it like a state-by-state thing?
I think there's some states where it's against the law. I don't think that some suggest that you should use them versus don't use them, but some states it's illegal, according to the Google. Do not activate your flashing lights. It will only cause confusion and compromise your safety. Hazard lights can actually reduce visibility, making other drivers think you are stopped or stalled. So there is that. Warning other vehicles of a disabled stop vehicle, that doesn't really pertain to this.
Growing up in Wisconsin, the big thing was you use them if you're stranded, your car breaks down, or you're on the side of the road to let people know, I can't get out of the way and I'm stranded. It is really weird to me when driving and a guy in the middle lane is having the emergency lights going. I had it happen in perfectly fine weather the other day coming off of 99, and I'm like, he's driving erratically. He's all over the place. He flicks the emergency lights on, and then a half mile later, they're off, and he's casually signaling to get off. And I'm like, what was that?
Yeah, you'd think that like maybe he had like a blown out tire or something. Right. But if he's driving casually after
that. Or your radiator or something, and you need, you know, it's steaming, and you need to get off to the side of the road. But
maybe he was – what time was it?
It was probably about
– maybe he's listening to News of the Weird and something just, you know, kind of
5:45
startled him.
At night.
Oh, it was, I guess it was a weekend.
Like Saturday night coming back. Yeah, coming back from Connor.
Huh, interesting. I personally don't do that. I don't use my hazards unless like I, you know, my car's like stalling or whatever. Do whatever is necessary. Like multiple people are responding now. Do whatever necessary to make yourself more visible. If the hazards help other cars see you better, then do it. But how would you know if that's helping the other vehicles? Like,
well,
you wouldn't know that.
So the reason why I, especially here, because you see it here, I think, more frequently than in most other cities. When you are stranded and you're supposed to pull over to the side of the road, how many times do you see DPS guys and sheriff's guys and bystanders trying to fix their car just get hammered by a car that wasn't looking? And I think that any chance that you have of at least extra awareness that those things are flashing, especially when you're in the emergency lane, not on the far right lane, at least you give yourself a better chance of being seen. Because I know a lot of people with the phones and everything they got going on and Waze and driving 100 miles an hour, they're not looking a whole lot to see if there's a stall on either side.
Yeah. This guy's a storm chaser, he says. I've been a storm chaser for 15 years. Flashers only reduce visibility and isn't helpful. Dre, who's a professional driver, he says to use them. He said to use them on the Twitch. Big Art says, on behalf of my fellow truck drivers, turn off your hazards. So you have a one truck driver saying turn them off, in all capital letters with an exclamation point, and then you have Dre that's saying that you're supposed to turn them on. Well, but Dre's also uses the left lane in his big rig, so I don't know what to believe. 1509, not allowed to say the company, but we are required to use hazards on our trucks. If not, it's a write-up because of the dumb call-in number on the back. That's interesting. That the company
who's
that
gonna
he drives
rat
for
in a storm.
Oh, come on. I mean, in 2024, like with the amount of Karens, like you have people right now going to Chipotle's and recording the people making them bowls because there's a rumor that it leads to more food in the bowl. Like, come on. Like, that's who's going to rat
but
on
like,
them in 2024?
The
literally
you can
anybody.
See in front of your windshield, in front of the end of your car, and someone's going to say, call and say, instead of how am I driving, 1-800, eat, you know what? They're going to call that number to say, well, he's not driving with his hazards on in bad weather. That's stupid.
Yeah, I think it is stupid, too. Eric says, lets people know who is a bad word driver, for sure. If everyone puts the hazard on, what's the purpose? It's a good point. Mm-hmm. Like, if everybody has their hazards on, it's like, oh, okay, what are we doing here? I don't personally use them. Based on the reaction that we're getting, I don't think you're supposed to use them. And Google tells us that, too, and Google's very smart.
Like, at night, if my car would break down, while I'm waiting for a tow truck or whoever.
Yeah, if you're in the shoulder. Or,
yeah. Especially because a lot of, you know, on 99 and a lot of the highways that you use, they're not always well lit around, you know, the rural highways in Texas too, that you want the best chance of someone to realize, hey, there's actually a car here and it ain't moving, as opposed to in the middle of the daylight or when there's a storm going on and you're driving in the center lane 50 plus miles an hour minimum. I don't know why you got them on.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Oh, we got breaking news from the Texans.
Bring it.
Breaking news from the Texans per Diana Rossini. The Texans and wide receiver Nico Collins have agreed on a 3-year contract extension worth up to $72 million. Nico Collins is a Houston Texan for good, at least for the next three, four years. 713-780-ESPN. We'll react to it live. What does this mean for Nico Collins? What does this mean for the Houston Texans? I'm very interested to see when it kicks in for Nico Collins and the Texans. 713-780-ESPN. Nico Collins, 3-year contract extension worth up to $72 million. Good deal, bad deal, like it. Dislike it, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Nico Collins has signed a 3-year contract extension worth up to $72 million. The new deal is going to pay him around $24 million per year. Your immediate reaction, Blinkers?
I'm not surprised. I'm wondering how Stephon Diggs is going to react to it. But
I mean, he signed a new deal. I mean, I don't know if Diggs can be a whole lot mad, a whole lot upset.
Like, I mean, it basically kind of clears the way that if he's going to get his money, it's probably not going to be here. But the first indication to me is we brought this up when Caserio was trying to clear some more cap space a couple months ago, and everybody was thinking, and it was like, I think it was right around the draft, and everybody was thinking that, you know, he was doing this because he had another signing that he wanted to make, and they still had enough money and flexibility if they did want to bring someone in. But we brought up the fact that maybe he is looking, and then there were rumors out there from some of the national guys, maybe Nico Collins is going to get his extension before the season started. If they have the cash to do it, and they can lock up a guy that they feel totally confident in, that he's going to be their number one, or he's going to be who he was last year, regardless of if you call him number one or not, and the fact that you can get him at a little bit of a discount at 24, if he had another year like he had last year, you got to believe he was going to command probably minimum $3 to $6 million more per season, based on what some of the guys Amon St. Brown and some of the guys are getting in this league now, regardless if they're the best receiver in the league or not. If you're a wide receiver one on a decent team, you're probably looking at 30 right now as the benchmark. So good on them to wrap a guy up that obviously has good chemistry and has had good results with CJ, and you roll from there.
The only three players in the NFL, only three receivers in the NFL are in 30 or more. A.J. Brown, Amon Ross, St. Brown, Tyreek Hill. I don't understand why the Texans are doing this right now. I'm curious to see when the new contract triggers. If it doesn't trigger until after the 2024 season, okay, it makes more sense to me. Other than making sure that you're friendly with Nico Collins, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense from the salary cap, financial, fiscal responsibility point of view. $24 million per year, AAV for Nico Collins. He had a really good year last year, his first year with a quarterback. This isn't about Nico Collins being a bad football player. In fact, I think Nico Collins is a really good football player. Now, $24 million a year is tied for seventh most AAV for a receiver. Do you think Nico Collins is a top seven receiver?
Nope.
Jury's out on that. But then secondly, you have the franchise tag. The franchise tag's roughly $22 million a year right now for receiver, and maybe it goes up to around $24 million, but there's no guarantee of Nico Collins leaving. I don't understand the urgency of going to get this deal done with Nico Collins, because $24 million a year, normally if you get contracts done early, it's because you're saving a few million dollars from the AAV. This isn't saving a few million dollars from the AAV. This is just taking care of a really good football player. Maybe that's their MO, and I'm okay with that. Like, hey, we have a player that we really like. We're going to go out and we're going to take care of that guy. But in terms of like the salary cap and like the financial responsibility, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do it right now. They're not really saving any money. They're top seven money for a wide receiver. A.J. Brown makes more. Amon-Ra makes more. Tyreek Hill more. Devontae Adams more. Cooper Kupp more. Devontae Smith more. And that's it. That's it. He's tied with DK Metcalf. It's more than Deebo Samuel. It's more than Michael Pittman. It's more than Calvin Ridley. And that's probably the tier of receivers he's in. But you weren't like on this deadline to get a deal done. I would have waited a year. I would have waited a year and used the franchise tag as a bit of a bargaining tool for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, when we were discussing this, and I know you brought it up then too, that was probably an option that they should have probably strongly considered or considered more. But I do think that they saved some money, because I do think the same way that when we talk about, I think the expectation from their standpoint when they're looking at this is CJ's going to be better in year two. They really developed a great chemistry to where he had an extremely productive season, and they expect him to continue to do those kind of things. If he's going to do those kind of things, and the AAV for wide receivers, regardless of where you sit, is going to continue to go up, even if you're not one of the top seven wide receivers in the league or however you want to draw the line in the sand, that they're probably going to save, I said, between 3 and 6. He probably would have started at 27-ish next year in year one.
That's top five.
Right now it is.
Sure, but, and I get your point. Like, inflation's going to drive the price up. I get that. So you lock in a fixed rate. It's kind of like a mortgage, right? You lock in a fixed rate versus a, you know, and I guess not fixed rate that could fluctuate. But you guarantee yourselves one more year with the franchise tag at roughly $22 million. So you cost yourself, and again, this depends on when it triggers. If it triggers this year, then I don't think it triggers this year. Because now you're paying a guy $24 million whenever he was still in the final year of his rookie deal. If I had to guess, this is going to trigger after that. So maybe you're going to lose money up front, because the franchise tag roughly 22, AAV's 24. Now it's marginal, but it's $2 million cost, but it's marginal. Now your point is, well, it might cost them $2 million in 2025, but it's going to save them somewhere between $3 to $5 million in 26, 27, and 28, which I think is a good point.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at it too, let's also not discount the fact that maybe as much as from the Belichick Patriot way of thinking and doing, there's a whole lot of I don't care about feelings. There's a whole lot of I don't care about, you know, being, you know, showing my player good faith and doing this and doing that. They took care of Diggs. They did good by him, quote unquote. And if this is part of that deal too, let's do good by Nico. He had a hell of a year. We have him in our long-term plans. Let's get it done now. Take that worry off his plate, and also let us know there's a good chance, or at least a chance, we could save some money in the long run with this deal, and then we just move on to the next guy that we got to worry about.
Yeah, I think that there is value to that, and sometimes I'm dismissive of the value of taking care of your guys. Like, we're going to have this foundation, we're going to have this core, and they're going to be our locker room leaders, and they're going to carry the culture, and they're always going to be the ones that are responsible whenever new players come in, that you have to, you know, adhere to the culture that we have going on. And sometimes you do have to take care of your guys with a little bit more money, you know, and maybe earlier to ensure that you have that culture and that foundation, which sometimes I admit that I can be dismissive of. So perhaps that's part of it. Like Mr. Money Mustache, he puts dollar amounts on happiness. And maybe that exists. Maybe it's worth spending a few million more bucks to ensure happiness within your locker room. I mean, the Texans did that with Steven Nelson. They did it with Stephon Diggs. Now they're doing it with Nico Collins. Maybe they are trying to buy happiness a little bit.
It goes a long way because you go from organizations that at first probably did things by the book, per se, and may have rubbed the player the wrong way to the standpoint of a George Springer type deal where before he even got to free agency, you knew he was probably gone because he was probably a little irked by the fact that they held him back, though they played it by the book. And when you look at I've been privy to conversations in the past in my experiences where you hear guys in the locker room go, especially working around Daryl Morey, guys would literally have the conversation, I'm looking to take the best deal out there, and Daryl's going to treat me like an asset. And he is going to, as much as he says he loves me today, tomorrow could be a totally new deal if there's a shiny new toy in front of him that he likes better than me, and I ain't looking to do him any favors because he hasn't done any for me. That could be at least where, if it's a close situation between you and another team, they're taking the other team because they don't want to be treated like an asset. They still want to have some extra love shown them, like, you know, being part of a family that everybody likes to talk about. But in reality, it's a business.
Yeah. Now, he wouldn't be in jeopardy of leaving, though. Like, he wouldn't. You have the franchise tag at your disposal, and a texter saying, well, maybe they want to use that franchise tag elsewhere. On who? Like, who are you using the franchise tag on? Like, is Stephon Diggs a guy you're trying to use a franchise tag on? Not me. Like, I'm not trying to give Stephon Diggs on a franchise tag for a variety of different reasons. So, you weren't in danger of losing him. Like, there's, I mean, pros and cons to everything, right? The pros are you lock in a player that you want here long term. Great. He's going to be part of the foundation. He's part of the culture, et cetera, et cetera. The cons are that he's only had one good year as a pro, and you're guaranteeing him top seven wide receiver money in the NFL for one good year when there is no way that if he has a good season, he could leave next year because you have the franchise tag at your disposal.
Well, that's a good point.
So I put more weight on the cons than the pros because of the franchise tag. If the franchise tag wasn't around, okay, then yes, lock him up, make sure that he's here for the foreseeable future. But because you have the tag, I'm making him do it for one more year.
I said to you, because call me cynical, but I always want to see more. I saw what I saw in last year, but I also know, and a lot of it was put on Davis Mills, and rightfully so, that we never saw this from Nico Collins before CJ got here. I would have liked to seen at least one more season. I like competition. Excuse me. I like the fact that Diggs is obviously playing for a contract. Nico's contract's coming up. You know these guys are going to be playing their tail off, and they're trying to show their wares to whoever out there to realize, hey, in Nico's case, I am the guy for this team for the future. Diggs, whether it's here or somewhere else, I am a wide receiver one no matter how old I am and what else has it's water under the bridge. Now, you know Nico's all taken care of. You know, now you got to worry about Diggs at the end of the year, and I don't think there's any way they're paying him $20-some million a year.
The texts are saying this is a good timing. You have Diggs coming up, or you have Lamb and Jefferson that will be free agents next year that will reset the market. This is huge. I hear what you're saying because that's going to shake up the free agent market, the wide receiver position. I just don't put Nico in that tier. Like Nico is not in the tier of C.D. Lamb and Justin Jefferson where I'm worried that he's going to get C.D. Lamb, Justin Jefferson money. I don't think that the difference of like getting it done this year versus next year is that great. I think it's like $24 to $26, $27 million, but I get the added security that he stacked another year on top of it. And then, of course, I have the franchise tag that if he's not willing to do business, boom, tag you. Now you're going to have to prove it to me for 3 years.
Yeah, the big thing is, as we've talked about this previously, when it gets down, especially with quarterbacks, Dak, Matthew Stafford, at times the guy that's the number one highest paid quarterback in the league isn't maybe one of the top five best quarterbacks in the league. It's just the timing of my contract came up at the right time at my position to where I'm going to command this amount of money. Now, I think Justin Jefferson is completely out of whack when he's asking for $40 million a year. But I think that when you talk about guys, if Nico is truly, if he has another year to prove he is the one on this team, then the agent is obviously going to come to the table going, wide receiver ones are getting this. Top of the line guy is this. My guy's right in that with stats and everything else. My guy fits into that to where he should be paid this. If it helps by a few million dollars, then they got themselves a deal for the long haul.
Yeah, and I guess we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I guess we really won't know. Like, we'll have to figure out, like, a comparison and who Nico player comp would be that's going to be a free agent to ultimately see what they get. But the positive side is that you have a player that you like that's here for the next. I think this extension is going to be tacked on to his rookie deal, so you're looking at 4 years. The con is, what if he was a one-hit wonder? What if he was a one-hit wonder? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We'll continue talking about this if you'd like. Also, what are the pitching options? We didn't get to it earlier. What are the pitching options if Javier and Urquidy are toast? Those MRIs aren't good. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.